WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The bad news for Syria, the conflict there is now officially a civil war. The good news, it's now officially a civil war. Here to explain is David Sheffer, former U.S. Ambassador at Large for War Crimes Issues. He is director of the Center for International Human Rights at the Northwestern University School of Law. He was last year here for his recent book, All the Missing Souls, A Personal History of the War Crimes Tribunals. Professor Sheffer, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Brian.
It's the International Committee of the Red Cross that officially declared civil war status on Sunday. What does it mean?
Well, it means several things. First, that the International Committee for the Red Cross is the guardian of the 1949 Geneva Conventions and the two 1977 protocols to them, which update them. And that's a significant responsibility by the ICRC because they truly look at how during periods of armed conflict, the use of force is used, particularly against civilians and those military personnel who have fallen outside of combat because of wounds, etc. So by designating this as a civil war, and technically they call it a non-international armed conflict, but we know it generally as a civil war, that actually gives the ICRC, within its own governing mandate, the responsibility now to monitor what is going on in Syria in a very, very serious and focused way, and also to hold very confidential discussions with the Syrian government as to whether or not they are complying with the provisions of what we call Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions, which deal with civil wars. So this gives them a gateway to the Syrian government. The Syria is a state party to the Geneva Convention, so it has a responsibility to invite the ICRC in to observe how prisoners are being treated, how civilians are being treated. So far, we've had the UN on the ground with its monitors. That has not been very successful. Now the ICRC will demand that kind of access, but the downside is that they deal very confidentially with the government. They don't go in, see what's going on, and then issue a public report for all of us to see. Their methodology is one of trying to persuade the government to comply with the Geneva Conventions, but to do so very confidentially.
Well, as I understand it, the Geneva Conventions already applied to the three areas of Syria that had been most engulfed in battle. But we have heard about massacre after massacre of civilians. So are these laws of war under the Geneva Conventions actually protecting anyone in real life in those situations, or does it just look good on paper?
Well, actually, it's all of what you've just described, because there's something a little misleading about what happened on Sunday for the general public, I think. What we have seen transpire in Syria for the last year and a half clearly has risen to the level of illegal criminal conduct long before this announcement. What we look at is whether or not, for example, crimes against humanity have been violated. That is not something that's dependent on there being an armed conflict or being described as a civil war or anything of that character. That falls under a separate set of rules, a widespread systematic assault on a civilian population. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights so described it long, long ago. So We've already been in the field of illegality for a long time in Syria. What the ICRC did was simply say within the field of armed conflict, within war itself, there has been a crossing of the Rubicon, so to speak, into a specifically defined civil war. So that's what was achieved on Sunday, and frankly, it also strengthens the charges of war crimes that might be made from this point onwards, because everyone knows that the ICRC is essentially has defined this as an armed conflict that gives rise to war crimes. But that whole field of crimes against humanity was triggered long ago in Syria.
But does this designation of civil war mean, in your opinion, that it's more likely that Bashar Assad will be held accountable for atrocities that he or his forces are committing?
Well, I think ultimately, yes. International justice proceeds along a fairly long timeline. And while it may seem unlikely to many people right now that someone like Assad may face ultimately a court of justice, I think if one just understands that the evidence will continue to be collected, that at some point relevant courts will have jurisdiction over him, whether it be a newly constituted free Syrian government someday that then looks back and charges him, think of Mubarak in that context, or the International Criminal Court in The Hague finally gaining jurisdiction over Syria because there has been a referral by the Security Council if Russia and China will ever permit that to occur. But I think the reality of holding him to account theoretically is certainly there. In practicality, well, we have to see. We have to wait and see if that can be achieved.
In 2009, the ICRC's Director of International Law, Philip Spoeri, told CNN that enforcing compliance with the conventions rather than recodifying their principles on paper was the highest priority. Does that indicate that enforcement has been lacking?
Oh, absolutely. In national courts around the world, there has been an inability so often for national military courts as well as civilian courts to actually hold civilian and military leaders to account for violations of the Geneva Conventions.
Because it's not the international court system, but it's the national courts that are supposed to hold their own war criminals accountable under the Geneva Conventions?
Precisely. That's exactly what they sign up for. And almost every nation, 194 nations in the world, are states parties to the Geneva Conventions. So everyone has agreed to hold their own accountable under the Geneva Conventions, or if they fail to do so, to extradite those individuals to jurisdictions that will hold them accountable, properly under the law, with proper jurisdictional reach. But that is a very, very chaotic and it's not a fully implemented system of enforcement whatsoever. And I think the ICRC was also responding in 2009 to notions that in the so-called war on terrorism, we have to sort of revisit the Geneva Conventions, revise them, and have them more relevant for threats of terrorism and what terrorists do. The ICRC, would naturally see that as sort of a threat to the integrity of the longstanding body of the law itself. So they would want to push back on that.
Would something like 9/11 be covered as a grave breach, I think the terminology is, under the Geneva Conventions, a war crime under the Geneva Conventions, or not, because al-Qaeda isn't a state?
Right, but it is constituted within states parties to the Geneva Convention. If you find a linkage between al-Qaeda and any particular government, which in 2001, of course, we did. It was linked rather tightly to the Taliban in Afghanistan, and Afghanistan is a state party to the Geneva Convention. So if you wanted to describe what happened on 9/11 as an act of war, as initiating an international armed conflict, then you can make the argument that triggers the Geneva Conventions. And that's the paradox that the Bush administration found itself in, which is that it wanted to describe everything in warlike character in order to avoid civilian prosecutions of these individuals and holding them under civilian control as opposed to military control, those whom it captured. But at the same time, it did not want to concede that the Geneva Conventions in fact applied, because then they'd have to apply to these detainees all of the rights of the Geneva Conventions.
Right.
So they found themselves in an incredible paradox, which they still, I mean, still has not been fully resolved in
right.
our government.
In fact, I want to talk about that. And my guest is David Sheffer, former U.S. Ambassador at Large for War Crimes Issues in the Clinton administration. He's director of the Center for International Human Rights at the Northwestern University School of Law. He was last on this program for his recent book, All the Missing Souls, A Personal History of the War Crimes Tribunals. And he was a negotiator for the United States in the establishment of the International Criminal Court, to which the United States is not a party. And while you're here, I know you're a big advocate of the International Criminal Court and getting the U.S. to join it or at least work with it. Does the ICC have a role to play in bringing Syrian war criminals to justice?
Yes, absolutely it does. The problem is, when will it be able to acquire jurisdiction over Syria? Syria is not a state party to the court. So the only way to gain jurisdiction over what is occurring in Syria is, under these circumstances, for the Security Council, to the UN Security Council, to refer Syria to the International Criminal Court under a Chapter 7 UN Charter resolution, similar to what was accomplished with Darfur and Libya last year. This is actually a very timely question, Brian, because today the UN Security Council is debating basically this issue of whether or not to put Syria under a Chapter 7 enforcement authority of the UN Charter. Russia opposes it very strongly. The United States and other, you know, nations like Britain and France, et cetera, support it very strongly. And that debate is occurring today in the Security Council. If they can trigger Chapter 7 under any number of circumstances, then that sort of opens the possibility that at some point Syria might be referred to the International Criminal Court. So it's a very important week for that.
Indeed. Now, more than 100 countries are parties to the International Criminal Court, including those we usually consider the allies and peers of the United States. All of Europe and South America, for example, if I'm not mistaken. But the U.S. has never joined, leaving it in the company of Russia, China, Indonesia, and much of the Arab world. What's the issue?
Oh, the issue is the reality of the United States as a globally deployed military, and the concern that our flexibility for military operations overseas would be compromised if we had to be held to account by an international criminal court for the legality of those operations. Now, this was an issue that raged throughout the 1990s. It's clear that there aren't enough votes in the U.S. Senate today to literally ratify the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. But it's also an issue that we worked very hard on to resolve in the negotiations by building numerous safeguards into the Rome Statute. I think the bottom line for the audience, unless you want to get into more detail, is essentially the United States, I think, has reached a point now in the year 2012 where we need to stop being intimidated by the concept of international justice. Our military justice system, our military forces should act with the confidence that they are complying with the law of war, that they're not literally with criminal intent planning crimes against humanity or genocide. Because if they are, and they're not being investigated and prosecuted under our national legal system, which they're supposed to be, if that is the case, then we have a severe problem in this country of justice.
The argument is that the U.S. as the sole superpower could have its officials indicted or arrested, officials or soldiers, for political reasons, more than people from other countries would be subject to that kind of phony prosecution. Just this month, we had the U.S. foreign policy critic Glenn Greenwald on the show. And his new book, as you may know, argues that high-ranking Bush administration officials should be tried for war crimes, for the torture they ordered or allowed. Do you agree with that? And would that be the likely result of the U.S. joining the International Criminal Court?
Well, I think everyone has to understand that at some point you have to face up to the requirements of justice. If the argument is we can act with impunity and not face the bar of justice, even in our national courts, we don't have to face the bar of justice for our officials. Well, that's an interesting argument. I don't know where that's found in the Constitution, but somewhere, you know, that's the argument of impunity for the United States. My argument with respect to the ICC is the United States has full capacity and is fully encouraged by the Rome Statute, if it were a party to the court, to investigate and prosecute its own. Now, that's what our allies have bought into, the British, the French, the Germans, etc., the Japanese, all have agreed that if there are questions raised about the conduct of their officials, they themselves, in their domestic system, will investigate and prosecute. Now, if the United States wants to say, wait a minute, we don't have to investigate and prosecute either in our national system or subject to any international court if there's a total breakdown of our legal system, mm-hmm. which I find unlikely.
Greenwald's book was largely about how President Obama and Attorney General Holder decided not to pursue prosecutions of the Bush alleged war crimes perpetrators.
But recognize that part of the reason for that decision, and I sort of disagree with the Obama administration on its sort of blanket refusal to dive into this era of what happened over the last decade. But there is a problem under even our federal law in that during the Bush years, provisions of immunity were actually built into various statutes so as to protect Bush administration officials from accountability. That's in federal statutes now, and that's a big problem. The Military Commissions Act of 2006 has that kind of immunity provision in it. Mm-hmm. So when the Justice Department looks at these things, they say, wait a minute, it was legislated by Congress in 2006 blocking us from being able to undertake these kinds of investigations. So it's really a question of Congress as well and their intent.
We're almost out of time. Back to Syria. So Syria is now a civil war under the laws of war. We recently completed a series on this program called End of War, in which we asked if humanity could ever abolish war like we abolished slavery. But do you think war has become more humane because of the Geneva Conventions?
Well, that's a very tough issue because anyone who lived through the decade of the 1990s, which I write about in my book, and all of the atrocities of the 1990s would have to sit back and say, wait a minute, what did happen to the Geneva Conventions during the 1990s? Certainly the Geneva Conventions have enabled us to constitute criminal tribunals to hold people to account. So in a judicial fashion, the Geneva Conventions have been extremely helpful in actually establishing accountability. I think on the issue of deterrence, ultimately, yes, the case has been made that there is deterrence with respect to the Geneva Conventions from one military to the next. You can see those kinds of timelines over decades, and there's been scholarship on this showing that in certain parts of the world, like Latin America, Southern Europe, where we went through a period in the 80s and the 90s with a tremendous number of abuses and war crimes,
and
etc.
We have 30 seconds left.
That we are emerging from that. That later generations have been influenced by the existence of these codified conventions that prohibit inhumane treatment of civilians.
David Sheffer, former U.S. Ambassador at Large for War Crimes Issues. He is director of the Center for International Human Rights at the Northwestern University School of Law and author of All the Missing Souls, A Personal History of the War Crimes Tribunals. Thank you so much for talking to us again.
Thank you very much.